but
Yeah,
we
I'll
know
get
what
your
it
account
is.
too. I got it.
A couple of things I wanted to address really right up front are, you know, there's a lot of noise that swirls around this. There's a lot of noise that swirls around most things today. I referenced earlier, mostly, you know, oftentimes dysfunctional federal government. The reality is there's a lot of good stuff that happens that doesn't get a lot of noise because it's not very sexy. It's not very interesting. This was not one of them, however. But one of the things I want to say right up front about it is there, you know, there are really two things in our U.S. Constitution that are that the federal government's charged with. You know, everything else is left to states, right? And one of them is, of course, defending our shores, that is to say, national security. And the other one is interstate commerce, that is to say, the movement of goods and services throughout the country, state to state, across state lines. Everything else, you know, pretty much delegated to the states. No, not delegated. It's not delegated to the federal government. Therefore, it becomes the role of the states. The interesting thing, however, about particularly surface transportation is that it's a combination of the two. It is our federalism system at work. And the bill that was passed recently in the House that the president will be signing this week, really, federalism is such a big part of it. And I'm going to explain some of that in a little bit. And then, you know, we want to open it up to your questions. I also want to thank Bill Panos and the Department of Transportation here in North Dakota, first of all, for hosting us today in their wonderful facilities. And thank God for rain. And thank God we didn't schedule this outside. So thank you for that, Bill. And also, you all should know, we get the opportunity so often in Washington to brag about the exceptionalism of North Dakota. We settle for a lot of mediocrity at the federal level, but the exceptionalism of North Dakota is reflected in the way our government runs. And Bill's one of the examples of that. Bill was a key witness. And when I say key, he was a witness at one of our hearings. A lot of you may not know this, but I happen to be the ranking member of the Transportation and Infrastructure Subcommittee of the Environment and Public Works Committee. And why that's important, and I asked for that position, and given my seniority, I was allowed to have it, is because we knew we were coming up on an expired highway bill, and we'd have the opportunity to craft a new surface transportation bill, along with some other things. And I wanted to make sure that we were looking out for rural America, and that we were looking out for federalism. And the reason that was so critical this go around is because, as you may have noticed in the last election, there was a shift of political power. And what that means is that states take a little bit of a lesser role in the current administration than in the previous administrations. It's just it's part of the cycle of politics. And so for me to be at the table while we're drafting a lot of this was really, really important. So Bill came and testified at one of the hearings, not on the entire bill, but on a portion of the bill, a portion that's become quite controversial lately. And he became such a good witness that about halfway through, my counterpart, the Democratic ranking member, the chairman, Ben Cardin from Maryland, leaned over and said, "Your witness is incredible." And I said, "I know." And the reason he said that was because pretty soon all of the questions are going to Bill because of his technical background, his technical knowledge, his demeanor, and just the way he expresses the facts, void of emotion and not conviction, but void of emotion and in a town that's very emotional. So thank you, Bill, for your contribution to this. And also, Bill and the folks here at DOT are very important. They're very important resources for us. As was Russ Hansen and the folks over at the Associated General Contractors who build our roads and bridges and a lot of our other infrastructure. Eric Spencer and the folks at not just the Greater North Dakota Chamber, but all of the chambers, and then all of the groups that the various groups. And we'll go through some of that. I know we've got a little logo poster here, but there's a whole bunch more, well over 100 organizations, ranging from just about every commodity group, the American Farm Bureau and the National Farmers Union, a whole bunch of business organizations and labor organizations that support this bill, which is, I think, really critical, because at the end of the day, we work for the people, the employers and the employees. And more importantly, most importantly, those that build out the infrastructure that moves commerce. Okay, so we're going to talk about a little bit of that. One of the things that I brought up right away was, there's a lot of misinformation out there. And it's allowed to be out there for a couple of reasons, not the least of which is the sausage making process in Washington. And I'm not going to bore you with all of it. but it creates confusion. And it also creates opportunity for mischief for those who want to, you know, use rhetoric to describe something other than the truth. What I mean by that is this, there were a number of bills that had either passed the Congress or at least passed out of the committee, like the Surface Transportation Bill that passed unanimously out of our committee. When something passes in the Senate unanimously in an entire committee, it means that there was a lot of compromise. That means that, you know, Tom Carper, the chairman of the Environment and Public Works Committee from the Northeast, and Shelley Moore Capital from West Virginia, I think Tom's from Delaware, you know, that's a pretty big boy. That's a pretty big philosophical difference. They have to come together on some things. So that's the basis of the bill. And I just think it's really important. There's one little tidbit. I'll just use an example. There've been a lot in the news, including, you know, publications like the Wall Street Journal, Forbes, Fox News, a lot of the networks that say the only 6% of this bill, this $1 trillion infrastructure bill, only 6% of it's roads and bridges. And I'm going, yeah, but $413.5 billion is the number we put into the law. And I didn't take Common Core math, but I'm pretty sure that's like 40%, not 6%. It's 40%, over 40% of this is roads and bridges, solely roads and bridges. Not an insignificant fact to remember. Now, what'll happen is, you know, somebody will dig down into the legislation and they'll see, well, but according to this CBO score in the 10-year window, it's a five-year bill. 10-year scores, you know, it doesn't quite add up to the exact number that somebody said it does, but it's a good $400 billion nationwide. Let's get to the really important part of all of that. And that's what it does for North Dakota. That's what it does for North Dakota. And we're going to go through that right here. We've got some pretty good factoids here. So the $413.5 billion for roads, bridges, and highway projects, more than $2 billion of it is for North Dakota. And I'm going to let Bill elaborate a little bit on that, and he can elaborate on that $125 million, just what that means. Russ's people are really looking forward to this. $40 billion of this is dedicated to resources for bridges, $225 million of which is set aside for North Dakota. And Bill and Russ, Eric, you guys can maybe talk to some of that, and if not, I can bring up some of those issues. The bridge thing is a big deal. And it's specific because bridges are specific, and because we have, when you think of the crumbling infrastructure and you think of this, the safety factors, bridges are a big part of that, right, Bill? Here's a little piece that's a lot of people may not know about. There's an additional $2 billion surface transportation grant program for projects in rural communities. So apart from the $2 billion that Bill's going to get, or roughly $2 billion, $2.1, something like that, there's another $2 billion that he can compete for. And when I say rural, we carve that out because of their, obviously, rural matters to us. That's for communities of fewer than 200,000 people, which is all of ours, you know, right? So that's we're in a pretty good standing there. I'm going to talk a little bit about this last one, Bill. And then what I think I'll do is I'll turn it over to Bill and to Eric and to Russ in some order. I'll introduce each of them. And then we can go back to other details if you'd like, but I want to speak a little bit to this bottom one. Maintains the traditional funding formula that's beneficial to rural America. You guys, this is a big deal. And the reason this is a big deal, and so it's a fight every 5 or 6 years. This is where the federalism piece comes in. There are a lot of people whose power in Washington is derived from the fact they come from really highly populated areas, the House of Representatives particularly. The Senate, God bless our founders, you know, the Senate is what looks out for the little guy. That's why every state gets two of them, right? So the funding formula is roughly a 90, what we call 90-10. 90% of the surface transportation dollars go to states, and in some cases, communities, MSAs. And in this case, Fargo is one of them that gets some of that. But why is that important? That's important because it's at the state level that they can determine where, you know, what the highest priorities are. The other reason that's important is because if you left it all up to the power brokers in New York, California, you know, say Seattle, Washington, or Texas for that matter, it doesn't matter your politics, it matters your population. They want to put more dollars toward population centers and ignore the fact that you can't reserve, as I like to say, 100 miles of interstate for gravel in the middle of the North American continent and still get, you know, still get Durum to become pasta. And so maintaining that formula was a really big, and it was a big fight for us in our committee, but we maintained that. There are other parts of the formula that are important as well. The tradition has always been that of the surface transportation piece, 80% of it would be for traditional, you know, surface transportation, the other 20% for other things like transit. And that's another one of those ongoing fights. Well, in the original Build Back, you know, highway bill or the transportation bill that the president wanted, and I won't speak to that in a minute too, but they wanted to flip it to 70-30. They wanted to flip it to 70-30. So only 70% would go for roads and bridges. The 30% would go for subways and buses in big cities and whatnot. And we fought that back to the point where the final bill is 83-17. So we actually gained. We actually gained proportion. That's how important this was to rural America. So I think with that, we get some other things that I can talk about later, but let's stick with the surface piece for now while we have the surface experts here. And we'll let you guys do that. And then open up for questions. Let's have Bill Panos, just an incredible leader. Come on up here, Bill. He's shy. Incredible leader and brings so much value to this whole discussion. And by the way, the people of this country are really lucky that Bill is our director of transportation in North Dakota. Because of this relationship, he gets to testify at a hearing where everybody leans on his expertise and it benefits the whole country. So thanks, Bill, for your incredible.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Well, thank you. You know, we're fortunate in North Dakota to have our congressional delegation, our governor, lieutenant governor, and our legislature all focused on investing in infrastructure and moving our great state forward. You know, in rural and smaller states like North Dakota, the need that we have is very urgent, and we're heavily reliant on federal money. And in North Dakota, not unlike other small and rural states, more than 50% of our roadway, bridge, and construction budget comes from the federal government. We rely on federal funding because, as you pointed out, Senator, there aren't as many options to generate revenue like large population states, but we still have miles upon miles of bridges and roads to maintain. So, matched with state funding, the bipartisan infrastructure bill will benefit North Dakota in countless ways and will allow North Dakota DOT to move forward on planning and completing transportation projects that we didn't otherwise have funding for. More money, it makes more money, the bill, the infrastructure, bipartisan infrastructure bill, makes more money available to North Dakota for bridge replacement, bridge rehabilitation, bridge preservation. You're probably noticing a theme. Increases our federal formula funding for the next 5 years. I can't emphasize enough how important federal formula funding is to rural and small states throughout our country, including North Dakota. It increases much needed funding for transit and highway safety programs. Our highway safety programs are critical. Here in North Dakota, we have something called Vision Zero. It's our effort to reduce fatalities on the highways in our state and across the country in our nation. And we'll see an increase in funding for that program. It includes historic amounts of funding available for federal grant programs. Senator Kramer pointed out the rural state portion of the $2 billion surface transportation grant program. This is what we call a rural state set aside. These set asides are incredibly important to states around rural states and small states around the country because we have difficulty competing for grants with larger states. It provides funding for the installation of electric vehicle charging stations, which will be powered from electricity from all of the above mix of energy sources led by baseload coal power, including natural gas, wind, hydro, solar, and biofuels. The funding is significant. Let me say that again. The funding is significant. It is, in fact, the largest federal highway bill in DOT's history. This will directly leverage state funding dedicated to transportation in North Dakota. The five-year bill, let me get into some details if that's okay. The five-year bill allows us adequate time to plan so we're ready for the next 5 years. Typically what happens is what we're dealing with something called continuing resolutions, which are short-term funding programs. This leaps forward and says you are now funded for the next 5 years. So we can plan, engage dollars, engage contractors, they can hire people, they can buy equipment, being ready for the next 5, 10, 15 years. It is a significant change into how we've been funded over the last few years. This will add jobs in North Dakota immediately. It will make us more competitive and provide economic stability throughout the state and for years to come. I mentioned earlier about the long-range funding formula. It's critical for small and rural states. So one of the things I wanted to mention is that it helps us keep our costs down in states like ours. Our share, cost share in North Dakota is one of the best in the United States. It's an 80-20 cost share, which means that for every $8 that comes in from the federal government, we put in only $2. That is great for small and rural states. Again, because we don't have the economic breadth and diversity that some of the larger states have. And as I mentioned before, this focuses in on our greatest needs, bridges. Not just building new bridges, but maintaining the bridges that we already have. Making sure that the bridges we already have throughout our state realize their design life so that we don't have to replace them earlier than we should. So I want to thank our delegation. Thank you for your support now and always on transportation. And the needs here in North Dakota. I really want to thank the state legislature, which is meeting this week, for your work in advancing hundreds of millions of dollars through the special session that's happening right now here in Bismarck. And I just want to finish by saying this. Infrastructure, this is a comment not just for North Dakota, but across the country. Infrastructure is vital to our economy, to commerce, to agriculture, to tourism, to families. It touches every single thing and impacts every North Dakotan. It's worthy of our investment. And future generations will thank us for the work that we're doing right now. So with that, I'll turn it back over to you, Senator. And I want to thank you again for your support of the infrastructure bill. Incredible work, incredible outcome. Great for North Dakota. Thank you so much, Jill.
Thank you so much. Thank you for all your work and for being such a great resource as well as a friend. You touched on a couple of things that I'm going to have Russ Hansen and Eric Spencer come up here now because. So Russ represents Associated General Contractors, the people who build those roads and bridges, right, and maintain them. And so as Bill was talking about the importance of 5 years and certainty, I could imagine. I was thinking about all your members going, yeah, I mean. Do you have any idea how much it costs to invest in equipment, for example? And you can't do that on a one-month basis. Let Russ describe. Just so, yeah, I mean, really, you guys, there's a reason we do five-year authorizations, right? I'd like to have made it eight. I tried. But anyway, Russ, you go ahead.
Good morning, everybody, and thank you so much for the invitation. One of the great things about North Dakota is how we collaborate so well together. Congressional level, state level, agency heads. And so my comments really are reflective of what has been previously said, because we're all on the same page here. And as the senator mentioned, I represent the Commercial Contracting Association that builds and repairs and maintains all of the infrastructure that is included in this act. And this is probably a comment more appropriate for our Chamber of Commerce, but we have to have an infrastructure system that moves people and goods safely and efficiently. With energy and agriculture being our top two industries, we export everything. So we've got to get it out quickly and safely. And an act like this allows it. From the industry perspective, very close to acts like this, we follow it. You know, as association advocates, and some call us political nerds, almost daily, we want to thank the policymakers when we get to the finish line with an act like this. This process doesn't happen overnight. I remember being in your office, it might've been 3 years ago, when we were at a national meeting with my leadership, and he had just come out of a EPW meeting and said, I got an update. We're already moving on the next highway bill. And my leaders were already, we've got 2.5 years left. Well, it takes years. So there's a great amount of appreciation when we get to a position like this. So we thank you and Senator Hoeven and those that supported this. Certainty, as the senator mentioned, whenever I'm talking to the people I represent, they're like, yes, you know, with inflation and things like that, more money is needed, but certainty is the most important, so that the department can plan, the industry can plan, everybody can plan over 5 years. That allows that. Not this last act, but I think the one before, we had a couple years with over 30 short-term resolutions. And that was a very chaotic time where there would be bid lettings and all of these things planned. Well, they can't bid. The DOT can't bid until they have the money. And with these short-term resolutions, it was very, very piecemeal. And that's chaotic for everybody. This allows a certainty to plan over an extended period of time. Just a couple of things that I'm going to hit upon that we think are really wonderful in this bill and important. This was mentioned, the funding formula. And the reason it is so important is we have amongst per capita the most road miles of any state. And it's not our fault that we're sparsely populated and have lots of road miles. We're a big state with not a lot of population. So it's imperative to have a strong federal highway program. We don't have the population base to say, well, let's just put in a toll road and pay for it that way. We just don't have enough critical mass. So that is really important. The other thing that is very important that we like in this bill, okay, we have the money. It's here for 5 years. Everybody can plan, if you look at the program, but there's permitting reforms that allow it to get those projects out quicker. Sometimes it took up to 7 years to get projects going. I think this year's got like a 2-year goal.
That's right.
So that's really important. So I will turn it back to the senator and just express our appreciation for a 5-year bill and look forward to working with everybody to achieve those goals.
I love it. Thanks, Russ. Great job. Really important stuff. And thank you for your friendship. And the thing about association directors, they're so great, are their members, right? And Russ has very active members and they stay in contact. And by the way, I'm pretty regularly pick up the phone and call one, say, what would this mean? What would that mean? Russ pointed to the permitting reform, which is interesting. So the permitting reforms, there's a couple of them, but the one that's especially valuable for building roads and bridges and surface transportation, it's called the one agency decision rule. And if that sounds familiar, it's because back in the day when Donald Trump was the president and he was talking about a $3 trillion highway bill, he started out with $2 trillion and was trying to negotiate up to $3 trillion infrastructure bill. He initiated in a rulemaking process a one agency decision rule. It applied to all infrastructure, pipelines, transmission lines, roads, bridges, ports and waterways. And on the first day in office, Joe Biden repealed that rule. And what one agency means is that means you do things rather than concurrently, you do them all at once. So if there's four agencies to touch something and each of them takes 2 years, that's an 8-year process. So if one agency is the main agency doing, say, a NEPA process, that agency can collaborate with all of the others. So you do it collaboratively rather than consecutively. And that brings a 10-year project down to 2 years. So that got repealed on the first day of Joe Biden's presidency. We put it in the law. So for those people who say, well, this was just, and I don't mean to sound, well, I do. This is just a gift to Joe Biden. This is the Biden infrastructure plan. This is a big victory for him. He wanted $3.5 trillion. We got it down to $1 trillion. He wanted no reforms. We got reforms. He wanted a 70-30 transit road split. We got it to 80. We not only held our own, we gained the percentage for highways and bridges. So this was an American victory. This was a collaborative victory. And I think this was a type of legislation that Americans can look at and go, there's hope for those people. After all, they can actually work together and get something done. I want to come on up, Eric. The really key thing Russ touched on, he mentioned supply. He mentioned inflation, and inflation's a real, right? Inflation's real. Input costs are up. All of that said, though, the one thing about this is this gets to the supply side of the economy. All of the money to this point that's come in the form of the CARES Act and all of the other, the most recent one, the $2 trillion one that the Democrats passed on their own American Rescue Plan, that all is free money given to people to spend. Some people call it stimulus, but none of it creates a job. What it does is it creates inflation, because the supply side, which we are seeing played out in our ports right now, the supply side of the economy is shorted. You create false demand or artificial demand, and you starve the supply. This builds the supply side of the economy and has ramifications all over the place, including holding back inflation. So with that, a word from our broader business community. Great. How's that?
Perfect. Well, good morning, everyone. It's an exciting day for all of us, I think. My name is Eric Spencer. I'm the president and CEO of the Greater North Dakota Chamber. And as the speakers before me, I want to thank you, Senator Kramer, for your leadership in helping to get this passed. I also like to thank Senator Hoeven for the same. And outside of workforce, infrastructure is one of the top priorities for North Dakota business leaders. And I have a few facts for you. Each year, there's nearly $2 billion shipped to and from sites in North Dakota. 74% of all the goods shipped in our state are by truck. Over 215,000 jobs in North Dakota are directly connected to our infrastructure and surface transportation. And that doesn't include the nearly 15,000 jobs that are directly connected to the design, construction, and maintenance of our infrastructure. So this is big deal for all of North Dakotans. And that doesn't include the people who want to run and go get groceries, go visit tourism sites, need to get to work. So investing in safe and reliable transportation is a priority for business leaders across the board in North Dakota, as well as our citizens. I'll add that, the passage of this bill will help our ability to remain competitive here at home and globally for years to come. Whether we're moving commodities out of state, whether we're importing raw materials for manufacturers, moving general freight, you think of retail goods, or getting people to work, this is a big deal. I'd like to note that this is more than just roads and bridges. It's going to further airport infrastructure, water infrastructure, transit infrastructure, and energy, all things essential to business, no matter the size or industry. And I'd like to note that the passage of this bill may also help with our truck driver shortage and the movement of freight. And we all hear about this backlog of freight. That piece over here about the pilot program allowing 18 to 20 year olds to cross state lines, that's a big deal because today you can drive from San Diego to Sacramento in California, but an 18 year old can't drive from Bismarck to Billings. And you think about 18 year old drivers on a farm or in the military. This just makes sense. And so with that, the passage of this bill, along with the work the North Dakota legislature is doing, is nothing short of historic, and we should all be very excited. So thank you, Senator. It's a bright day.
Yeah, thanks. That was well done, well said. And thanks for pointing to some of the other things I haven't pointed to. In addition, this has been obviously focused on surface transportation. There's a lot in there for broadband. And again, I can answer questions if you'd like about that. There's a lot in it for water. Water's obviously critical, whether it's ports or waterways, the rivers and stuff. Getting, you can't get that North Dakota crop from Duluth overseas unless you can get down the Mississippi River and get to a port. And that's true, of course, we have, in the energy sector as well. There's $4.7 billion in it for the REGROW Act. The REGROW Act is, again, back to North Dakota exceptionalism. The REGROW Act is a bill that, a standalone bill that became part of this, that Senator Ben Ray Lujan, who's from New Mexico, he and I served together in the House of Representatives. He's a Democrat, I'm a Republican. We are both on the Energy and Commerce Committee. We both have oil, right? And we both have a lot of abandoned wells that they're orphaned wells. Well, North Dakota, with the leadership of Doug Burgum and the Industrial Commission, took some of the CARES Act dollars and put oil workers to work during the recession they were going through with the collapse of price. Restoring these, not restoring them, but capping the wells and then restoring the land around them, reclaiming, using their expertise, paying them to do something that's important that has environmental impact. And we took what North Dakota did and made a federal bill out of it. And this part of this bill, $12 billion for carbon capture, use, and sequestration. $12 billion. Now, the future of North Dakota's energy sector depends heavily on carbon capture, use, and sequestration. So we got that into this bill. The interesting point on that, the energy secretary and I worked pretty closely together on this bill. Although she's been irritating me a lot lately, but anyway, that's another story. We worked together on some of the energy infrastructure here. There's a lot for electric transmission lines as well, and cybersecurity of our energy infrastructure. There's $213 million to improve and upgrade our drinking water and wastewater infrastructure. Obviously, that's important. $94 million for North Dakota's airports over 5 years, as was alluded to. The airports are a federal entity by and large. I mean, they're owned locally, they're managed locally, but the federal government, the FAA, has complete jurisdiction over the skies of America and are very important. So we need to keep our airports going. We talked about the permitting reforms. One that we didn't talk about, and I look at Micah from my shop here, is that we also put legislation in there that incentivize the building out of gathering lines for natural gas, for methane. Now, this is a really big deal in North Dakota, you might have noticed. We produce a lot of oil. Gas is a byproduct. It's not a waste product, it's a commodity, but it's a waste product if you can't build the gathering lines around it. So on federal lands and Indian lands, we created an incentive for capturing more of that methane, more of that gas. And Eric alluded to the pilot program for 18-year-olds, relief for livestock haulers. There's a whole bunch more, you guys, but it's more than you probably care about. But with that, let's open the floor for some questions and answer the question that you really had on your mind that we didn't even talk about after you got here. Anybody have a question? Yes.
Yeah, this might be a question for someone from the DMT, but will any of the funds go towards the Teddy Roosevelt Expressway project?
There you go.
You're right. That's why federalism works.
So your question is, would any of the funds go to
the Teddy Roosevelt Expressway project in Western North Dakota?
We have a program that we work with the federal government, the FHWA, Federal Highway Administration, the USDOT, to actually plan out all of our projects over the next 7 years. And in that plan, there's movement, a little bit of movement, but it really is a plan. That's why I mentioned earlier how important this bill is for as it relates to its five-year timeframe. So it allows us to better plan with the federal government. There are hundreds of projects in there. I don't have all of those on my mind. I can recall them all right now, but I can get back to you about what's in all of those plans as we go forward. It also is dependent upon what happens in the state legislature this week, because many of these projects are identified by the legislature as priorities, and we integrate those into our planning with the USDOT. So I can't directly answer a specific question about that specific project, but I can say that's our process to do it. I think the entire western part of the state, along with the eastern part of the state, along with the center of the state that we have here, is in need of funds to maintain the physical infrastructure assets that we've already built. And that really is our focus. It's not about making things bigger or new. It's about highway safety and maintaining what we have that we've already invested in to ensure that it meets its design life and then move on to other things. So, when we talk about expansion, it's a very limited sort of conversation. For instance, Highway 85 that moves on the western side of the state from 94 all the way up to Watford City, that's likely to be the next place that we do some four-laning and some other kinds of projects like this. But that's just one example of many. So I can't answer that specific road, that specific project, other than the fact that Highway 85 is sort of part of that whole program all the way north and south. And so one of our projects is to expand Highway 85. I'd only say one more thing, that this the work that we're doing with the legislature now and this bill together will help us to get to the next phase, which is four laning between Watford City and the Long X Bridge.
Director Panos, can I ask a question about your view of this $1.2 trillion, what you would consider actual infrastructure, what we've always thought of as infrastructure?
Yeah, I'm with the senator and with our other delegation. There's a significant amount of dollars that are in this bill that are focused, regardless of what's been reported in the press, that are focused on the national press, focused on surface transportation and all other types of infrastructure like water, broadband, airports. And again, this bill is remarkably full of regulatory reform. Some of them have been pointed out today. It is a remarkable bill. And we are so pleased that it got through the Congress before Thanksgiving. I think all of us wanted it a little bit earlier. In fact, we thought we would get it a little bit earlier, but it came and we are very, very pleased with where it's at. So I think that there is a significant amount.
What percentage would you say?
I'd have to go into the details of it, but as the senator had talked about, 40-60%, it's higher than what I've seen in the press. And when we talk about infrastructure, it's not just surface transportation. So it's water infrastructure, it's carbon capture, it's some of these other things that are in here that are actually going to go to creating jobs, helping our economy grow, positioning the state of North Dakota for the future economy, and frankly, just maintain the assets that we already have in the ground so that we can realize their design life, whether they be water or surface infrastructure.
Senator Kramer, I think a lot of your supporters even are confused because they hear the other bill that's not yet passed
is
being debated.
Right.
And they're complaining this. Even House Republicans are giving a lower number of percent of infrastructure. So people just want to know what you consider actual infrastructure in this bill percentage-wise, and also what don't get right. What
sure. do you have to take? Sure. First of all, it's all hard infrastructure. And anybody tells you otherwise is either lying or they're confused. And it'd be understandable if they're confused. It'd be understandable because of the sausage-making process. Because there's part of it is, and I don't want to bore you with too much swamp talk, but scores that the Congressional Budget Office scores means the price tag are done in 10-year increments. Authorization is usually 5 years. So everything's, it looks like it costs twice as much as it actually is going to. That's one factor. The other factor is you have things like a highway trust fund and the highway, what used to be called the highway bill, the surface transportation bill, used to stand on its own. Now, when it's part of a bigger package, you have some dilution of things, but doesn't make any of the rest of it less important. So with regard to what adds up to the trillion, it's really more like a trillion than 1.2 trillion. It's not, all of these numbers get conflated, they get confused with other things. But so you have roughly $400 billion is just highways and bridges. But then you have all these other things like ports and waterways, railroads, transit. Now, you can argue some of that's not the kind of infrastructure you like, but you can't argue that it's not infrastructure. Transmission lines, electric transmission lines, cybersecurity. Who could argue that we need to harden our electric transmission? Now, I might argue, and I have, that it's not really a federal government role, that's a ratepayer role, but the costs have to be socialized some way, and we do need to get it done quickly. So that's, I wouldn't do that, Scott, but you know, Republicans are in the minority in the House, the Senate, and don't have the White House, so we'll take some of that. What I like the least probably is the $7.5 billion for electric charging stations. You know, the last time I checked, private sector builds gas stations, and the private sector should build electric charging stations. But it's an emerging technology. That's a high priority for some. To Bill's point, if we have more electric cars in North Dakota, that means we're burning more coal. You know what I mean? So there's that, right? So all of that, broadband's another one. Broadband's one that some people will argue, well, that's not infrastructure because they think Wi-Fi comes from outer space or something. Well, first of all, satellites are infrastructure. Cell towers are infrastructure. Fiber optic is infrastructure. And what do you do without broadband? Well, you don't do precision agriculture without broadband. You don't use Siri without broadband. You don't get educated very well anymore without broadband. And there are a lot of underserved and unserved areas, not just of North Dakota, because frankly, North Dakota is pretty good on the broadband front. I feel guilty sometimes when I talk to some of my friends from other places that don't have what we have in terms of broadband, but even we have unserved and underserved areas that, and that is to say, don't have the speed that you need for, say, telemedicine or for education in modern times, particularly pandemic times. So that's all in there. And again, some of it, you might not like the type of infrastructure, but it is infrastructure. And that's been one of the more confusing parts. The other thing I would say about some of the critics, remembering when I went to Congress, now 9 years ago, I spent 6 years in the House of Representatives, a very different body than the Senate. I was the only one from North Dakota. I always used to say, if I had a really great idea and I could get all of my colleagues from Montana, South Dakota, Alaska, and Wyoming with me, there'd be five of us out of 435. And that's the way the founders created it. But one of the very first frustrations I had, and I've had ever since with Congress, is that no is the easiest vote to cast because it's the easiest thing to explain. It's very easy to explain, oh, it didn't have everything I wanted in it. Oh, it had a couple of things I don't like in it. Well, you're the minority, you're in the minority party with a president of the other party. Our founders created it hard on purpose. You use the leverage that you have to get the best thing you can get for the sake of the country. But if, you know, one of the most common arguments I hear from some of my friends, Scott, is, well, you just handed Joe Biden a victory. Last time I checked, my job was to hand North Dakota victories. And if that happens to give Joe Biden a victory, so be it. But he came a lot further down than I came toward him to get this victory done. And I think we are losing the art of compromise and negotiation when every transaction has to involve a loser. What I look for is opportunities where there are winners on all sides. And I think that's what we have in this bill. Yes.
Two questions for Bill.
Yeah.
Can you say a little bit more about how the infrastructure funding will interact with the funding that's being worked out by the legislature right now? Is there just in case we have needs for all of the money, I guess, that's at play in the capital right now, in addition to the funding?
Yeah, first, let me also clarify the answer that I gave before. When I'm talking about 40 to 60% in this particular bill, I'm talking about surface infrastructure. The senator is absolutely right. All of this is infrastructure in some form. And that's what's great about this bill. And this bill has been in play in this form, all in on infrastructure, since early fall. And that's why we are so happy to have it now. So the bill is all about infrastructure. The federal bill is about infrastructure. And I guess we're all in here, and I think it's fantastic. So I've been waiting a while for this, and I want to extend my gratitude to all of our congressional delegation for their effort. With regards to the state legislature, there are a number of things that the legislature is currently considering. State funding in the rural context is incredibly important to match with federal funding, and incredibly important independent of federal funding. There are many things in federal legislation and federal regulation that we need in North Dakota that we cannot spend, let's say, federal dollars on, that we have to spend state-only dollars on. Many of these are local bridges. Many of these are township bridges. I had the good fortune of going to a beet harvest over the last month, and they wanted to show me what their roads and bridges look like. I did not see a bridge that was unbroken during the entire day. And so these kinds of projects are funded by state money and not federal money. So the from a surface transportation point of view, and I would say too from water and other points of view, there are places we can use federal money and there are places we can't. And that's when the state legislature becomes so important, because continuing to fund infrastructure, whether that be surface infrastructure, airports or water or broadband or other kinds of things that the federal government does not allow its money to be used for, is an important part of the fabric of funding infrastructure in a state like North Dakota. And it's not only unique to here. I've said this several times, I think, today. This is the same situation in South Dakota, same the situation in Montana, Idaho, Wyoming, where I just recently came from. So and other states in the East that are small and rural states, West Virginia, et cetera, they're all very important. And these sort of programs where their state legislatures are funding infrastructure programs in addition to the federal government become critical.
Great point. I might also, you know, add a little bit. Something interesting happened, started happening at the during the debate on this bill, but it carried through to just a couple of weeks ago. And that was an amendment that was attempted, but again, because of the rules of the road, we didn't, weren't able to get it into the final passage of the bill, although I would have loved if House Republicans would have offered it. And that was an attempt by Senator Padilla from California and Senator Cornyn from Texas, a Democrat and a Republican, to provide more flexibility to states and legislatures and governors with leftover money from COVID relief funds. And I think it was like up to 30% of whatever they had left, they could apply to transportation, to infrastructure. And that meant that matching piece would now be provided, you know, they'd have that money to use as match, which just leverages all the more money. That's one little thing. We didn't get it in, but we passed it unanimously 2 weeks ago in the United States Senate. And so now it's in the House, and you know they should be able to pass it just as easily. It's I don't know who could be against it. More flexibility with existing dollars. That leads me to the other point that my very capable staff over here just reminded me of. This bill's all paid for. It's all paid for. And I know, you know, the president says that the Build Back Better Act is free. There's no such thing as free. It's not free. It's not free nor paid for. It's very expensive, and would require tax increases. This one doesn't have any tax increases. It's one of the complicated parts of the scoring process. You know, I talked earlier about why people might be confused, is that certain things count as quote pay fors. So CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, is the scoring entity, and they can't score everything because what they don't score, that is the score is the price, right? Where is there money to do this? Remember the main, you know, the main source of revenue is the Highway Trust Fund. We all pay into it. Every time we fill our car, you know, it's big as life right there. How much goes to the federal government? How much goes to the state government? And that's the biggest pot of money, but it's not nearly enough to do everything that needs to be done. Rather than looking for tax increases or looking to raise the gas tax, which by the way, some people are willing to do. We should have indexed it years ago, so it was reflected inflation. But since it wasn't done that way, and raising taxes is very difficult and unpopular, we went after existing dollars and repurposed them. And a lot of them, most of them, frankly, $53 billion from states that with unused federal unemployment dollars, the unemployment insurance dollars. You know, that's a lot of money, and there's no way that money's ever coming back to the Treasury. So we repurposed it, but it doesn't get a score because it's already been appropriated. There was another $67 billion in savings from COVID-19 employer retention tax, $69 billion. That would have been wasted. We repurposed it for this. So a lot of it is that. There's some economic growth as well that's factored into the dynamic score. But it's all paid for, no tax increases, builds, you know, pays people to work rather than not work. Fights against inflation by investing in the supply side, and works with our state and our legislature, and they're all aware of it. We're all, to Russ's point, the blessing of North Dakota is we all know each other. And if I ever get on the wrong side of Bill Panos or Rich Wardner, I'll bump into him at Menards and get my butt chewed. You know what I mean? It's such a great thing. It's such a great thing to be so connected to such really good people. So I think we've covered the front, unless somebody's just dying to know something about, you know, a good rumor about, you know, Ted Cruz or something. I don't. Anyway, thank you all for your interest and for your patience.